When I was a kid, it seemed like every week there'd be a jumble sale in the village hall. This is back in the 60s. And it would be in aid of either the pantomime or the children's theatre or Women's Institute. And Mum, God bless her, she'd be involved with many of these organisations. So our house at 37, prior to the jumble sale, would be full of unwanted broken toys and lots of, I remember, grey, colourless clothing. And you'd have a push bike. You'd think, oh, there's a bike, but it would have like a pedal missing on it or something like that. And I, even as a child, I can remember thinking, who the dickens is going to want that blimmin' rubbish? Different village folk would knock on the door of 37 and they'd invariably deliver useless tat. And my mum, bless her heart, she would always go, oh, thank you, my love, that's lovely, thank you. Even if it was junk. And you could not move in our house for jumble sale tat. Very occasionally, Mum would buy a jumper, like a second-hand jumper or a pair of shorts or a skirt from a sister before the clothes got into the sale. And she'd invariably put in more money than she needed to. And my dad would always say, well, what are you putting that in for, Sheila? You wouldn't pay that at the sale. And all I do remember, looking back on it, is Gaynor and I went to school dressed like the bloody Bisto kids for the next school year. I do remember that, in second-hand clothes. The jumble sale itself would attract people from all over the place, but mainly Teignmouth. And old ladies, they would catch the 2B bus when it was able to drive through the village without getting tangled up with all the traffic. And they would stand outside of the village hall with long coats, horn-rimmed glasses very often, cloche hats, big handbags, folded arms with a really stern-looking face. You know, and we would describe it nowadays, people would describe it with a face like a slap backside. And us kids would be there, and when the doors of the village all opened, you had to stand well back out the way because it was like a stampede of old ladies getting into the hall to get the best bargains. In the hall back then, they would serve tea and biscuits from the same hatchway that they serve now in 2024. And I can remember my mum at the end of it, somebody saying, Sheila, how much money did we make? And she'd go, oh, £20, £30, which then was a lot of money. When the adults at the end of the jumble sale would be cleaning up the hall, we kids would be sliding on our knees and our backsides until some old villager would tell us off for doing something wrong. I can remember that, old folk moaning at us. The unsold jumble would be picked up by Mr. Roberts. Mr. Roberts was the rag and bone man from Teignmouth. And it was in true Steptoe and Son style. He'd come at the end of the jumble sale and us kids would go over and stroke the horse and one thing and another. And the horse would invariably mess in the road. So the horse manure would then be picked up by some old boy in a bucket for his garden. So as kids, if you compare us kids back then, kids nowadays would be playing around with their mobile phones and they'd be ready to unplug their parents' life support machine to plug in their mobile. We, dressed as the Bisto kids, we would entertain ourselves by watching grown men shovel up horse manure. That's all I can remember. It was crazy. Bishop Stoughton Primary School turfed us out at about 3:30. Gaynor and my sister were trusted to walk home. And a lot of the other kids, their mums would turn up. And I can remember really just seeing mums. Very seldom would you see a dad outside the school to pick up the kids. The legendary 2B bus would turn up again and that would take the Teignmouth kids back home. After school, I don't remember having any homework, but we would go and play football in the road. And if the winter darkness stopped us doing that or the weather was lousy, we'd sit in front of the telly. And our TV at home at 37 was supplied by a company called Rediffusion. And if it went wrong, the TV repairman would come out and he'd bang it and wire something in and he would fix it. It wasn't the dark ages, but if we had to watch snooker on the telly, it was a bit tricky when you were watching it in black and white. The programmes that I can remember were Blue Peter, Captain Pugwash, Thunderbirds, Animal Magic, And they had kind of programs that were more inclined for the girls, which would have been Black Beauty, with its legendary theme tune, and The Lightning Tree. But I don't know if anybody else can remember, there was a Tales from Europe series called The Singing Ringing Tree. And it was scary. However that was allowed to be on the telly for kids, I'll never know. And it was on at tea time. So we either had to watch The Singing Ringing Tree, or you'd watch Blue Peter, where Valerie Singleton made a nuclear power station out of washing up bottles or something like that. But The Singing Ringing Tree really sticks in my head. On a Thursday night, the Pools man would turn up. A guy called Eric Rendell lived in Westtown Meadow, and my dad would leave some money out, and he'd take the coupon and take the money, and it was to predict the football matches that would draw. So sometimes as a kid, my dad would allow me to pick the numbers, and if you won, you became a millionaire overnight. And suffice to say, we never won. Back in the day, we would leave money on the doorstep for the Unigate milkman or the newspaper guy, whoever the chap who owned the newspaper shop would come and pick up his money. You'd leave the ignition keys in the car overnight. Parking in Bishop back then was not an issue. And Gord's lorries and coaches would regularly drive through the through the village with no problem whatsoever. Gord's were based at Radway Gardens in the village, and I can remember as a kid the furniture depository up there and seeing characters like Harry Harris and Don Davis going to work or coming home from work. Frequently the lorries would unload in the road between Radway Gardens and where Bronscombe is now, and all they do is they put a sign in the road saying unloading the lorry, please use another route. And people accepted it. But if you did that nowadays, you'd have to give 6 months notice, you'd have a risk assessment, a back survey, and somebody would be moaning to the council. It was so much simpler back in the day. I lived at 37 4th Street for my first 22 years or so with my mum Sheila, my dad Dave, and my sister Gaynor. And that was next to Central Garage, and Central Garage is still there today. Although there were a couple of previous owners, which I don't really remember very well when I was a baby, I do recall Mr. and Mrs. Codling had the garage when I was a kid. They had a couple of grandsons, Adam and Nicholas Hellicker, and Adam and I were school chums for a while at Bishop Primary School, and I do recall him having rather trendy long hair. I mean, remember people, this is Bishop Stainton. We were still pointing at aeroplanes in the 60s. He left the primary school long before we went to secondary education, and we kind of lost touch. But he went on to be a features writer for the Daily Mail, Sunday Telegraph. And I can remember reading in the Sunday Telegraph about him interviewing Madonna and dealing with Her Majesty the Queen. He's recently dealing with media and communications at GCHQ. And the Cabinet Office, as well as having written several books. So he went for a short time to Bishop Primary. I contacted Adam a few years ago and asked him how his life after Bishop Stainton Primary School could have gone so wrong. And he took it in good humour, and he did remember my mum and my sister and my dad. And also he has fond memories of Bishop when he lived with his grandma in Heartland, which is a house on Murray Crescent in the village. My sister Gaynor would often sit outside the petrol pumps in a pedal car wearing a boiler suit. And when the cars were refueled, similarly up to recent times, it was attended service, none of this self-service stuff. Once a week, there'd be a petrol tanker come up and would deliver to the tanks, and the tanks were down the lane beside the garage. And as a kid, the tanker seemed absolutely huge. And as about 4 years old, I was plonked in the driver's seat, and I think that was my introduction to be fascinated and interested in road transport. Down the lane beside the garage, at the end of the lane, lived an elderly lady called Miss McGowan. And that name is still shrouded in mystery to me because I only saw her one or two occasions. What is much clearer to me is a gentleman called Mr. Pugh lived in Rose Cottage on the corner of Clanner Street and 4th Street, and he kept his Heinkel bubble car at Miss McGowan's. So as 5 or 6 year old, I would play out the back of 37 with Phyllis Aldridge, and we would run up and down the lane, and Mr. Pugh would give us a lift in his bubble car about 100 yards up to the top of the lane. And I remember it being bright yellow with its opening front door and all the power of a hairdryer. Jack Pugh, as he was called, and his wife Biddy, as I said, lived in Rose Cottage for a number of years. Jack was an engineer, and he bore a very, very interesting resemblance to the actor Donald Pleasance. He spoke very gently. As you walked into his house, you could smell the oil. And when you turned left, there was like an engineering lathe and equipment and a huge, great model, scale model railway locomotive and tender on a short stretch of line. And I believe Mr. Pugh would take this, put out his railway track, and we'd have the train for kids to ride on at village dues. Biddy Pugh had an equally calming, gentle voice, and she was always the prompt for the Bishop Staten players. And what I do remember is Mr. and Mrs. Pugh had a telephone. It was a black, old-fashioned, Baker-like thing with a dial on the front and a curly black cable, which would invariably get tangled up. In the village, Bishop Staten had its own telephone exchange, was right on the corner by St. John's Church. And Bishop Staten phone numbers had 3 digits. It was Bishop Staten 247 or whatever it may be. Mum, we didn't have a phone, so Mum used to use Mrs. Pugh's phone and would give her like 10p or 2 bob as it would have been back then. And she'd phone her sister in Birmingham, and then she'd hand the receiver to me and Gaynor to speak to her Auntie Phil in Birmingham. And it was like speaking to somebody on Pluto. Oh my goodness me, Birmingham, my word. I can still remember the phone number. It was Shirley 1551. My mum's incredulity of distances that you could use a phone over never failed to amuse me. A conversation that was very common when I was long distance lorry driving. Hi mum. Oh, hello my love. Where are you? Uxbridge, mum. Oh my God, are you all right? Mum, I'm fine. Uxbridge, not Auschwitz. Oh my Godfathers. That was the conversation with my mum. Wherever you were, it was, oh my God. Even if you're in Newton Abbot, she would say, oh my, you know, this telephone is a marvellous thing. Other activities in the village would be playing like a hide and seek game called Pom Pom outside of the old commercial, which was then called the commercial. The kids that would play there would be me, Gaynor, Steve Hill, Valerie Heal, Dave Cummins, John and Chris Dyer. And we'd end up hiding in the car park of the commercial inn, getting told off, climbing over the wall. And despite the signs on the electricity substation warning you of instantaneous death, Chris Dyer would always be stood on the top of it, waving his arms about, proclaiming his immortality. Get out, Chris. Subutio was a game that all us boys would play at each other's houses. It was like a miniature football game. The teams had different coloured strips and a green, like, roll-out pitch with nets and goals. Dave Cummins, Steve Heal and I used to play a lot, and John Dyer. And we'd have, like, I don't know why Chris didn't, probably because he'd stand on all the players or something. We'd record, like, we'd have an FA Cup competition. And the only thing I do remember that wasn't realistic was the ball, if it was to scale, would have been about 12 foot high. Dave Cummins lived at 13 Clanner Street with his mum, his dad, who was called Steve, and everybody knew him as Joe Cummins, and his brother, Roger, and sister, Karen. At Christmas, Mrs. Cummins would always display a Christmas snow scene, which sort of was a precursor to the Christmases. And I remember as a kid, and I'm sure other kids would have done it, you would have stood there in awe looking at this snow scene and the dark evenings and the cold weather. It was always a physical excitement before Christmas. Dave and I would play with our die-cast Corgi, Dinky and Matchbox lorries and coaches And incidentally, Dave's dad was a coach driver for Royal Blue Coaches. And we'd sit in the road in Cannon Street. Yep, in the road, around the telegraph pole, which is still there now. The base of it is still there now. Playing with lorries until a passing vehicle would disturb us. Many a summer night in the 60s, we'd be interrupted by a real-life coach. So back then, the local coach companies would conduct what they called a mystery tour. So you'd pay your money, get on the coach, and you'd end up at a pub not really knowing where you're going. So they'd start in Exeter, and they'd come in through Bishop and end up at the Ring of Bells, where the coach would then park on Shoot Hill. The punters would go in the pub, and then they'd go back to Exeter. So the words mystery tour would be on the destination blind of the coach, and 41 passengers would flock into the Ring of Bells, and always used to be 41 passengers, that was written on the bus. As kids, when they passed us at 13 Clanning Street, we'd follow the coach down through the village, go past the commercial, down past the Manor Inn, and it was almost like we were following something that we'd never seen before. But as kids, we were fascinated by vehicles. Older village would say, look out you boys, there's a shower coming. In shower was a slang term for shower bang, which I believe is French. And you don't hear it much nowadays. So a shower trip used to come through Bishop Staten. And what really stopped that was the parking where they couldn't get through the village. So it brought it to an end. When we got down to the Ring of Bells, we'd watch all the punters get off the coach, and they were mainly couples. You'd have the guys with their suits and their ties, and their, if they didn't have a tie on, they'd have wide open collars, and they'd have brill creamed hair, baggy trousers with a little woodbine sticking out of their mouth. The ladies would have their best shoes on, and they'd wobble off the coach in their best dresses. And again, a lot of them would have 1960s, almost Edna Everage type horn-rimmed glasses. I do remember the coach companies that would come through the village. You'd have Green Slades, Grey Cars, Wallace Arnold, and of course our very own Bishop Staten Gord's coaches. If we waited outside the pub, we would see people, adults, having the best times of their lives. The locals mixing with the people that got off the shower, beer and cider flowing, ladies with their cherry bees or baby shams sat outside the pub if the weather was nice, and they were singing and shouting, and they were having a fabulous time. And as I got older, I embraced that as well. I can remember the poor old drivers would sit outside the Ring of Bells on a summer night, and the driver, just like our very own Dougie Gord would have the white cap, the customary red, white and black PSV badge proudly displayed. And they would constantly be looking at their watches until they'd have a whip rein for the driver, and then it would be, everybody back on the coach, please. I can remember as a 6 or 7 year old watching men and women that then seemed ancient, but would have been 30s and 40s probably, shouting and dancing all the way back to the coach through all the cow shit that was outside Sheep Farm. Many of those people are certainly not with us today. So look back and enjoy the moment, because those people certainly were enjoying the moment.